So, but let's get to the topic, and I wanted to kind of talk about combination therapy, but in specific, that of ZNHALE. So I think we're all familiar with the GINA guidelines, and clearly where a combination product is to be utilized is going to be in step three or step four. It may be worth, you know, kind of giving you the kind of subject that I look for, patient that I look for in my own clinical practice. So Shauna is a 23-year-old female who comes in with some wheezing and coughing. She's had mild persistent asthma since the age of three. She also has had atopic dermatitis as an infant and in a toddler, and she suffers from seasonal nasal allergies as well. She presents already being on a low-dose inhaled corticosteroid and using albuterol as needed. At the time of this particular visit, she was using it three to four times a week on a fairly regular basis on most weeks, and then also reports having symptoms at least three, four times a week. So they're kind of going hand in hand, symptoms and albuterol need for rescue. She's also waking up at night at least several times a month. She has difficulty doing physical activities, keeping up with her peers. She really tells us she does measure her peak flow. She's got some diurnal variation. And also, unbeknownst to us, she had two exacerbations requiring oral steroids in the past year. So I want to kind of take you through again ZNHALE and why it may be an important addition to your combination, fixed-dose combination armamentarium. And again, I want to also point out again that you can see the device and you can see the dose counter. And this is an integrated single-dose counter, so each dose clicks off one by one. And I'm going to show you a little bit at the end about the advantage to this particular dose counter. So what are the attributes of mometasone, FUROATE? Unfortunately, I understand that it wasn't available as monotherapy before the launch of ZNHALE. We've had it in the U.S. since 2005 under the name Asmanex, and we did find it to be very, very helpful, especially since it was a once-a-day inhaled steroid for the most part for our patients. It's a non-fluorinated steroid with high anti-inflammatory activity, and the FUROATE ring at the 17 position, which is on the far right on top, is what provides its long-term action that allows once-a-day use. Chlorine atoms at position 9A and 21 are responsible for its high molecular potency. It has very little systemic issues. Also, you'll see that topically it's also going to be very safe. It has low bioavailability due to extensive liver metabolism and high plasma binding protein of 90%-99% is also a considerable advantage. Formoterol, which I think many of you are very familiar with, is a long-acting beta-2 adrenergic agonist that combines the advantage of a rapid onset bronchodilator, is maybe as soon as 1 to 3 minutes, depending on studies, with a long duration of action up to 12 hours. This is in contrast to salmeterol, another long-acting beta-2 agonist, which requires considerably longer time in studies, 17 to 45 minutes, again, depending on the study methods and delivery system, to induce the same amount of bronchodilatation with the same duration of effect. So in vitro tests with both of these long-acting beta agonists show they do inhibit release of mast cells from mediators, including histamine, leukotriene, prostaglandin D2, from human lungs, as well as histamine-induced plasma albumin extravasation and allergen-induced eosinophil influx. So it does have, in fact, some anti-inflammatory properties, although we don't sell it as anti-inflammatory. We still sell this as a bronchodilator dealing with the smooth muscle component. So this lists the developmental program that went to the FDA and some other regulatory agencies around the world for its approval process. So I'm going to touch on most of these. The long-term safety study I'll talk about at the end. The high-dose study, which is an efficacy safety study, and then the medium dose and the low dose. Now, the medium and low dose are what's called full factorial studies. They're actually comparing the combination product to the monocomponents. Now, the low dose, which is 50 of mometasone and 5 of formoterol, is really not going to be discussed because it is not approved anywhere on this globe. Not that it wasn't effective, because it was, but because I think the FDA decided, you know, we don't want it to have a real low-dose combination product. We'd rather see people using higher dose of inhaled steroids. We in the U.S., unfortunately, have a little bit of a lava controversy we're trying to get over, and I think we're finally reaching that point that lavas are not going to be a concern anymore to the FDA. There's also a non-inferiority efficacy and safety study, and then a dose counter study. So the first study I want to present is a 26-week efficacy and safety study of mometasone furoate and formoterol, and it's 200/10 micrograms, which really means it's 100/5, two puffs. And we're getting two puffs twice a day. And this is in patients with persistent asthma previously receiving medium-dose inhaled steroids, but still felt to be uncontrolled. So there was a run-in period of 2 to 3 weeks where patients were taken off of their previous inhaled steroid or combination product and put on mometasone furoate 100 micrograms, two puffs twice a day. And then after the run-in period where they wanted to make sure they were stable, they were randomized to Zenhale 100/5, two puffs twice a day, kept on mometasone 100 micrograms, two puffs twice a day, or given formoterol 5 micrograms, two puffs twice a day, or placebo. And just to dispel any concerns about, you know, ethics, you know, first of all, why treat with a placebo, and also even why treat with a long-acting agonist alone, the FDA actually required this to show efficacy. And you're going to see that the primary endpoints, which are co-primary endpoints, one is against formoterol, and the other is against mometasone, not against placebo. The secondary endpoints are being compared to placebo. So there are 781 patients, 42 years mean, and their mean predicted FEV1, percent predicted, is 73%. So certainly there are generally those patients that we see with the more moderate amount of asthma. You'll see in the next paper, the FEV1 is 67%, but those are patients that are a little more severe. And again, as I mentioned, these patients are not well controlled on medium dose inhaled steroids. So the co-primary endpoints are the FEV1 area under the curve from 0 to 12 hours. So these are serially looking at the FEV1 throughout a 12-hour period. And this is being compared to mometasone to actually see what the bronchodilating effect of the combination product is. And then the second co-primary endpoint is the first time to the first severe exacerbation. And this is being compared to formoterol, again, looking at the anti-inflammatory property of the combination product, and be able to protect it from exacerbations. So again, the demographics, I've gone over most of them. I just want to point to the bottom there that the asthma control was measured by using the asthma control questionnaire by Liz Juniper, and the mean for all four groups is 1.5, which clearly is showing not controlled. I should also point out that anywhere from 39% to 42% of the patients were not controlled despite being on a LABA in conjunction with an ICS. So again, that tells me there certainly is a need for other options. So this is looking at day one, and this is looking at the serial area under the curve, FEV1 measurements. And you can see that the onset is actually quite rapid. within 5 minutes. And again, the top two circles are the combination product, and right below that is formoterol. The next line down is mometasone, the bottom line down is placebo. And again, what this tells us that everything you're seeing initially is coming from the bronchodilator. You really wouldn't expect a rapid onset from the steroid alone or from placebo. And then the peak effect is occurring right around 3 hours. So that's day one. Now we're looking at the curves for week 12, which was considered the primary time to measure the primary endpoint or co-primary endpoint. And the blue is Zenhale, and you can clearly see it's giving the greatest amount of improvement at week 12, followed again by formoterol, because again, you're still getting that bronchodilating effect when you're looking at those serial FEV1s. And then you're looking at mometasone in green and placebo in black. Now, the effect is sustained, as shown on this slide. So this is looking at the same lung function measurements, but this is what's called a standardized serial area under the curve. So what they've done is they've taken all these different 12 time points, divided by 12, and come up with one specific time point. So you're looking at specific time points, and you're comparing week 1 to week 12 to week 26. So you can clearly see, again, that at week 26, the effect is sustained for Zenhale. No tachyphylaxis, not losing any effect over time. Now, I think this is a very important slide because this is now looking at peak flow measurements throughout the course of the entire 26 to 28 weeks. And why is it important? Well, you can see still the sustained effect with Zenhale in blue, but I do want you to notice that mometasone in green is actually doing what it's supposed to be doing. It just doesn't do it as well without the bronchodilator. And formoterol, of course, does not have sustained effect. And if you look at the EOT, which is the time of their last evaluation, formoterol and placebo are very similar. So clearly, again, a LABA should not be used by itself in the treatment of asthma. So the second co-primary endpoint was looking at the definition of severe asthma exacerbations. And this was described as either an ER visit or hospitalization due to asthma or the use of systemic glucocorticoids, a treatment that was judged necessary by the physician. Or they could have a 30% or more decrease in AM or PM peak flow compared to baseline on any two consecutive days. Or a 20% or more decrease in FEV1 compared to baseline when they came into clinic visits. Now, again, just so you feel comfortable about the way this was set up, patients were measuring their lung function every day. They had diary cards that they, electronic diary cards that were filled out. And so we knew if they were getting into trouble. They were also sent home with prednisone to bail them out if they're having a problem and they couldn't get into the office. It happened to be a Saturday or a Sunday. And so they were also automatically dropped from the study if any of these criteria were met. So we got around the ethical concerns about, you know, treating with a LABA alone or treating with steroids, and the patients were prepared to attack their symptoms if necessary. So now we're looking at the Kaplan-Meier survival curve and the top two lines, Zenhale followed by mometasone. So you can see there's a great deal of similarity, at least in the ability to reduce exacerbations. So, and we knew, quite honestly, that 400 micrograms of mometasone from previous trials would do a very good job in cutting down on exacerbations, not only the frequency, but also the severity. Whereas the bottom two curves, which are placebo and formoterol, clearly there's a considerable difference. And to give it some numbers, 70% of the patients on Zenhale had absolutely no exacerbations. 66% on mometasone alone, compared to 46% on formoterol and 44% on placebo. And of course, the comparison here is Zenhale versus formoterol, and that's highly statistically significant, as it was also against placebo. Now, just to look at the secondary endpoints, again, that are being compared to placebo, there is obviously an improvement in pre-dose morning peak flow, what's inhale, a reduction with placebo. There's a reduction in nighttime awakenings, fourfold greater with Zenhale over placebo. And also a reduction in rescue medication use of 0.6 puffs per day compared to an increased number of puffs per day with placebo. So that's the 100 dose, 100/5 strength. So now let me talk about the 200/5 strength. And again, a little bit different design. It's not, 26 weeks, it's 12 weeks. And it only has one endpoint, and that's looking at lung function. So if you're not looking at exacerbations, you need to take it out to 26 weeks. And again, as would have been guessed, because of the higher dose being used of mometasone, it was really recognized that we weren't going to have a lot of exacerbations. And I'll show you that data. Again, I mentioned that these patients were a little bit more severe. Their percent predicted FEV1 is 66% predicted. And their ACQ is more in the realm of 175 to 180. So now we're looking again at, on the top curve, day one. And again, similar to the previous study, the onset of effect is very rapid for both strengths, because the FDA said, we don't want you just doing a head-to-head of the high-dose Zenhale with a similar dose of mometasone without a bronchodilator. We want you to look at both of your strengths, the 100 and the 200. So you're looking at both the 100 and 200, and both are having a very rapid onset within 5 minutes, and a peak effect again around 2.5 to 3 hours. And then you're seeing very similar results at week 12. Again, no tachyphylaxis, no subsensitivity. It's continuing to do what it's supposed to be doing. So both strengths, 100/5, 200/5, had significantly greater increases from baseline at day one, as well as sustaining that at week 12. Now, what kind of difference are we talking about? Well, on the far right is the mometasone by itself. Clearly, it works, 170 ml improvement from baseline, but you're getting twice as much improvement with the 200/5 Zenhale. And then a little bit less than that with the 100. So they wanted to see this. This is what the FDA wanted to see. They wanted to see that at least there was some additional benefit by giving a little bit more inhaled steroid to the bronchodilator. So in conjunction with an improvement in lung function, there's also, as shown here, a reduction in asthma symptom scores. The lower two curves are showing that compared to the higher one being mometasone alone. And this is actually looking at the exacerbation data. So both Zenhale strengths, 100 and 200, 88% of the patients had absolutely no exacerbations during the 12 weeks. I mean, again, nothing. 82% on mometasone alone. Key secondary endpoints, and actually some of this derives from the lowest dose study that I didn't present to you, but it didn't matter whether you're looking at the low dose or the medium dose, which is 100, or the high dose, which is 200. There was always an improvement compared to placebo and AM peak flow, improvement in control as measured by the ACQ, improvement in quality of life, looking at the asthma quality of life questionnaire, and then also a reduction in nocturnal awakenings. And again, on the far right, you're looking at the high dose versus mometasone alone at the same dose, and clearly same results. So there are really no head-to-head studies that we can really draw comparisons from, with one exception. And so I'm going to show you this non-inferiority study. So it's non-inferiority. It's not supposed to show superiority. That compared Zenhale with fluticasone propionate salmeterol, Seretide. Now, this was an evaluator blind study because Zanhale is a metered-dose inhaler, it's an aerosol, and Seretide is the discus device. And the patients were, you know, open label run-in and for 2 to 4 weeks, and they're randomized to one or the other in a blinded fashion to the evaluator. Again, more females than males, as in every one of these studies. Their percent predicted FEV1 was 74%. And they were looking at, again, serial area under the curves throughout the 12-week study. Now, demographics were very similar. The only thing I want to again point out is that 61% of the patients came in on an inhaled steroid alone with the Zanhale group, 54% with the Seretide group, and then the rest were on combination therapy. And again, the combination therapy being utilized the most was, in fact, fluticasone and salmeterol, followed by budesonide and formoterol. And again, these patients' ACQs were pretty high at 1.8. So I think that to really show, even though this was a non-inferiority study, there was actually some superiority found. And clearly, it's probably would not be a surprise, and that is the onset of effect. So if you look at the, on the right side, the black bar, the yellow is actually the Zanhale group, and clearly having a much more rapid onset of effect, in fact, at 5 minutes, versus the purple, which is the Seretide, is at 30 minutes. So clearly you get a very good separation and onset of effect with Zanhale compared to Seretide, even though the sustained effect is the same over the 12 hours. So the question is, does that actually make a difference? And there are studies that actually point out that when patients feel something, they're more apt to be compliant with their medication. So, as I said, we have no other comparator studies to really compare Zanhale to Symbicort, but it may be useful to just at least see how you can compare mometasone to budesonide. And there are a couple of studies I'd just like to bring to your attention. The first study is by Jean Bousquet, and this is a study with patients with moderate persistent asthma, 12-week evaluator blind active control study, where mometasone at three different doses, again, this is the dry powder, this is the twist inhaler, this is, again, what we have in the U.S. for a number of years, although we now also have the aerosol as a result of the Zanhale studies. And the reason being is that the FDA said, gee, you know, your mometasone results were so much better than placebo, we're going to accept those arms as two well-controlled, placebo-controlled trials. We're going to approve it. So they approved simultaneously Zanhale as an aerosol, as well as now we have Asmanex aerosol. So here we're looking at 100 micrograms twice a day in gray, and pink is 200 micrograms twice a day, and the more fuchsia color is 400 micrograms twice a day, and comparing it to budesonide, 400 twice a day. So you got at least two similar strengths, one for mometasone, one for budesonide. You got two lower strengths for mometasone. And I think what you can see is that both the higher strengths, the 200 and the 400 twice a day mometasone, are far superior and statistically significant compared to budesonide. Although the 100 looked pretty good at week 8, at week 12, which was the time for the primary endpoint to be measured, it did fall to be similar to budesonide. Not below it, but similar to it. So clearly, the conclusions from this study were that 200 micrograms twice a day and 400 micrograms twice a day are significantly better in improving pulmonary function compared to budesonide 400 micrograms twice a day. The second study is the study by Jonathan Corin. And again, this is looking at once-a-day administration of mometasone compared to once-a-day budesonide, both at 400 micrograms. They're both dry powders, and also comparing it to placebo. And I think what you can see, again, is that mometasone is superior to both budesonide and to placebo. And again, this is statistically significant to both. And this just tells you, again, looking at asthma symptom-free days, you know, there's you know, at least 10, 12% improvement with mometasone over the other two comparators. So again, although I didn't show you all the data from this study, there was not only improvement in lung function, but there was also improvement in evening symptom scores, albuterol use, asthma symptom-free days compared to placebo and to budesonide over this 8-week double-blind study. Okay, so what about the device? Is it a good device, a bad device? Well, I mean, clearly, I'm not happy with an aerosol. You know, every one of my patients has an aerosol for rescue. We don't have any albuterols anymore that are non-aerosols. And the one thing that I do in my practice, at every visit, I make sure my patients know how to use their aerosols. There's nothing worse than having a rescue inhaler that you can't utilize properly. So this study by Craig LaForce actually looked at some characteristics, and they asked for comments from patients. And what they found, you know, on the left, these four different bars are agree, the middle four bars are neutral, and the other four bars on the far right are disagree. And clearly, you have a high degree of agreement. One, the majority of subjects agreed that Zenhale dose counter helped to relieve anxiety about running out of medication or using a dose remaining in the inhaler or keeping track of the dose that was left in the inhaler. So they weren't concerned. They knew exactly the number that was left. They also kept track of doses remaining in the inhaler, and they also felt it was easy to use, the device. So again, everything they wanted, they got, with very little exception. Now, what about the dose counter itself being accurate or reliable? This study by Cindy Weinstein shows that the Zenhale dose counter was tracking medication use with a low rate of discrepancies. That is 0.13 per 100 actuations. And 92% of the devices were without discrepancies at all. If you look down to the third bullet, the overall discrepancy rate for Seretide was 0.94 per 100 actuations. A lot higher. And that 58% of the subjects, only 58% of the subjects had no discrepancies versus 92% with Zenhale. The discrepancy rate for undercounting was extremely low for Zenhale at 0.05 compared to 0.33 per 100 actuations for Seretide. Unfortunately, you can't even do this study with budesonide formoterol's counter. Simbacort. It's not available. It doesn't click off one at a time, at least with this study. Okay, so just a few things about safety. You know, overall, extremely safe. And again, how this was done, this by Maspero, and again, they were looking at the comparable doses of Zenhale to Seretide, and so they were comparing 400 a day of Zenhale to 500 a day of Seretide, and also 800 of Zenhale to 1,000 of Seretide. And 52 weeks, 404 patients. And the primary endpoint was looking at not only AEs, but also plasma cortisol. And they did look at ocular changes as well as, you know, other lab tests. Now, again, just for time, I just wanted to point out the HPA axis. If you're looking here, the Zenhale 100, again, so a total dose of 400 of the steroid, showed a negative 2.2% drop in the plasma cortisol area of the curve over 24 hours. Compare that to the low-dose Seretide, which was a 16.7% drop. And then the higher strength, there's a 29.6% drop compared to 32.2%. Now, again, you know, even the higher strengths, this was not felt to be clinically significant, but it does tell you if you have somebody who is super sensitive, when you get up to these higher strengths, and even maybe with the middle strength for stereotype, there could be some potential concerns. So a summary of these in-health safety clearly is that with the three pivotal trials, the low, medium, and high dose, you really saw just the medium and high dose studies, anywhere from 12 to 26 weeks in duration, in the 52-week long-term safety trial, the total number of patients, 2,659, of which 1,132 were on Zenhale, really did quite well. The most frequent treatment-related adverse reaction in Zenhale group was dysphonia at 1.4%, not really high. Oral candidiasis, 1.2%. So to conclude, and hopefully you agree with the information I've given you, and this is all the information there is, you know, Zenhale studies confirmed a beneficial effect of mometasone, furoate, and formoterol, in adolescent adult patients, inadequately controlled on low, medium, and high dose inhaled corticosteroids. It reduced mild to severe exacerbations. It reduced asthma attacks. It rapidly improved lung function with no decrease over time. Reduced the need for albuterol for rescue, improved asthma control, improved asthma quality of life, and reduced nocturnal awakenings requiring a short-acting beta agonist. And its safety profile was similar to the mono components. So as far as indications, again, it's a fixed-dose combination product containing both mometasone and formoterol. An indication is for long-term twice-daily maintenance treatment of asthma, including reduction of asthma exacerbations. And that's different. It got that in the label, reduction in asthma exacerbations, which the other products could not get because they weren't doing that measurement at the time of their registration. It's indicated in adults and children 12 and older. Yes, it's a pressurized meter dose inhaler that is available in two strengths. And it should be used for patients not adequately controlled with an ICS and as needed inhaled SABAs, or more importantly, and again for some patients, those whose disease severity warrants initiation of treatment with two medications right off the bat. So, you know, again, I know the guidelines talk about step therapy, but clearly you don't need to be thinking step therapy. If you think somebody needs to go to step three, they go to step three, they bypass step two. Think they need to go to step four, they go to step four. So, again, it may also be used in patients already adequately controlled on both inhaled corticosteroid and LABA if you want to switch them to that combination or if they were on, in the past, separate devices. So I just want to thank you all for your attention. Hopefully this kind of gives you an update on one of the new combination products to your market. And if there's time, I can certainly answer any questions.
Thank you. Thank you for this nice review on safety and efficacy of Zenhale in treating asthmatic patients. The floor is open for comments and questions. Dr. Abi Saleh.
Thank you. It was excellent. Enjoyed it.
Thank you.
Now, the new GINA guidelines talk about in step three and four using as needed ICS LABAs, and they seem to believe that that actually decreases exacerbation rates, and they give it an evidence A.
Right.
I mean, you have a medication with potentially similar mode of action. Are you contemplating doing some, or maybe the company, doing some studies that would actually probably do the same?
Yeah, and that's a great question. And when this drug was launched several years ago in the U.S., a group of us as advisors got together, and the company said, well, what's next? What should we do? The first thing we said was do a SMART study, do SMART dosing. And then we also said maybe you want to do a head-to-head with Symbicort. The problem was And the problem remains. The FDA does not recognize smart dosing. Again, they are still hung up on LABA safety. They want to make sure people are not using too much LABAs. They want to have a fixed dose being administered when it's supposed to be administered. And this is a real problem. Now, I do smart dosing in my own practice. We are allowed as providers to do smart dosing. And it could be either, you know, having a maintenance dose and then using it PRN, or just using it just strictly PRN. But what we have to do is tell the patient it's off-label, and then we just have to note it in the chart that the patient understands it. So I would love to see this done. Clearly, there's no reason why this can't be done. You know, it has a fast-acting bronchodilator, no different from the formoterolis and budesonide. So I see no reason why it can't be utilized for smart dosing.
Any other question? You present the comparison between budesonide and monometasone. Why didn't there is no study comparing, frankly, Sembicort to Zenhale?
I'm sorry, I say that again.
The study you presented was a comparison between budesonide alone and between monometasone alone, right? Why there is no study comparing, frankly, Sembicort to Zenhale?
Yeah, I mean, you know, what we know, and this is true most of the time, it's very hard to show a treatment difference when you do studies between drugs in the same classes. So it would be hard to really picture how you would do a study if you're a company and try to show a difference, at least in superiority. Again, you know, they did the study comparing it to Seretide, but I think they knew up front the LABA was going to be a faster-acting one. But as you can see, the duration was similar. And I cannot imagine, and we, as I said, we talked about this, about trying to design a study that could compare Zenhale to Symbicort. But quite honestly, it just didn't go anywhere. You know, there's so much resources companies have these days. And they decided, you know, we're gonna just do it on our merit. They could show the difference with Bousquet and Korn and some other studies with the steroids by themselves and extrapolate that when you add the same LABA, you're going to just get, you know, the same type of results, a little bit better, and at a lower dose. See, and we are also at a disadvantage here in the U.S., rather. We don't have a high-dose Symbicort. Our highest strength Symbicort is a 160/4.5, two puffs twice a day. So we can't go any higher. We can't go up to, as you can, 320 and give two puffs of that twice a day.
You don't have 320?
We don't have 320.
Okay.
Yeah. And we don't have the turbohaler either. We only have the same aerosol. So, you know, we use Symbicort. It's just as if we use Zenhale. It's an aerosol, two puffs twice a day.
Dr. Abisale.
Just to comment, I don't think that you are at a disadvantage if you only have the 160 formulation, because then you could still use the smart approach by giving two puffs twice daily and then extra smarts during the day.
Yeah.
So when you go with a 320 formulation, then you are at the high dose of formoterol, and then you can no longer use it as smart.
You're right.
So
you're right.
You're okay.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely correct. And I was telling it to a group of doctors a couple of days ago, you can't go any higher than, you know, 19 or so because you're going to be getting to the toxic range for LABAs. And you are at risk, obviously, of hitting more cardiovascular side effects. I totally agree. But I understand here that they've came out with a turbohaler dose that's really a half a dose, which people need to realize they're not getting, if they're using it regularly, they're not getting the full amount of LABA they really need.